Radio.
The resurrection of the body. What happens to the body after death? A presentation by Deacon Robert Krishna at the 2017 Aquinas Symposium.
Cannibalism is a way of talking about what Augustine and Aquinas mean when they speak of the resurrected body. How do they envisage the resurrected body? So why cannibalism? Well, it originally begins with the series of objections made to the Christian doctrine of the resurrection of the body by educated pagans in the 2nd, 3rd, 4th centuries, particularly by a guy named Porphyry. So some of these objections are, what happens to bodies which have been eaten by other people, as has happened in times of desperation, as some of them are even in the scriptures? What happens to our nails and our hair? When we say we have resurrected bodies, do we get them back? What happens to those people whose bodies have been destroyed? Those who have a disability, those who have had imperfections in their bodies, as we all do. And underlying all of this, how is it that these very earthly, gross bodies can live in the perfect heaven? Some of these objections might strike us as a little odd or silly, but they raise several very important questions about the nature of the bodily resurrection and how we can ensure continuity. What is it that means that when we say, I am going to live forever, given that I'm going to be buried in some, 40 years, 50 years, and my body is going to dissolve into, going to be eaten up by worms and whatnot, and one day all that will be left is dust of this body. How is it that we can say it is I who survive? Is it enough that there is a spiritual continuity? Is it enough that there is only my soul which survives, as a lot of our contemporaries think? How can an earthly or a physical body live in heaven? So these are some of the fundamental questions that are being raised. And then, is my body my own, or is it a weight, something that weighs me down, that keeps me here on earth? Part of what St. Augustine gives to the Christian teaching of the resurrection of the body, which St. Thomas takes from him and refines further, is to deal with these questions. And we need to deal with these questions now, as we did back in the 4th or the 3rd or the 2nd century. Because if you look around, a lot of people believe in immortality. A lot of people, as Father Dom and I were watching something on TV the other day, and a well-known New Zealand actor came on and he said, there is some kind my parents are still here. There is a continuity of their spirit. Their spirit is in me. And you think to yourself, well, their spirit is in you, but which part of you does their spirit occupy? Where do you end and they begin? But a lot of contemporary people think that our bodies are meant to be here for this life and escaped. And this was precisely the late antique idea of Porphyry, where he actually said, if we want to be blessed, the body is altogether to be escaped. We should run away from our bodies. So that's the basic idea, and that's the value of what St. Augustine does and St. Thomas does. Where they begin, both of them, is the resurrection of the body is fundamental to the faith. As St. Paul said, if there is no bodily resurrection, then we are the most deceived of men. We are the most to be pitied. The Dominican theologian Yves Congar said that Vatican II was motivated by the common disbelief in the resurrection of the body. How to combat this? Augustine himself has this to say: our hope is the resurrection of the dead. Our faith is the resurrection of the dead. Our love, the word for love is caritas, charity, which kindles the preaching of things which are not seen and ignites our desire, by whose breath our hearts become capable of beatitude. This love of ours ought not to have hope only in temporal and visible things. And then he makes a leap. It's a very typical leap. Therefore, if you take away faith in the resurrection of the dead, all Christian doctrine would be at an end. And you think to yourself, why is it that he says, on the one hand, our love should not be fleshly, earthly, but we need resurrection of the body, and he means resurrection of the body here, if our love is to be rightly directed. What he actually means is that if all we have of the body is in this life, and all that survives us is the soul, then for as long as we have this body, we might as well go for it. And as it says in one part, as it says somewhere, we might as well eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. If the soul is all that survives, the body and what you do in the body really does not matter. But if we have an eternal, embodied life, then what we do in this world, in a bodily sense, becomes much, much more important. So that is why Augustine says, our preaching, our life, our hope, our love, all of this is centered on the resurrection of the body. So, but if Augustine wants to maintain this, he has to deal with these objections that he has brought up with Plato, and more importantly with Platonism as it develops. Firstly, Augustine denies strenuously that Platonism requires flight from the bodies. That is one of his first moves. But in order to contextualize all this, he has to see where this anxiety is coming from. Why do we say we must escape the body? The idea is that the body is seen by Porphyry, but also by many of our contemporaries, as the root of our sin and our unhappiness. It is because we have bodies that we can be tortured. It is because we have bodies that we can feel pain. It is because we have bodies that we feel lust, and so on and so forth. That's the general idea. It is the body which somehow takes control of me and makes me sin. So that is the first thing that he has to deal with. This idea of the body as the root of all our problems. And then there's the further idea of, which is related, that if this is the case, then in heaven, where there is all bliss, you cannot have bodies, because bodies are associated with non-bliss. So the way Augustine deals with it is to go back and look at the fall. What is it that makes the fall what it is? I think that's a fantastic picture, and it illustrates some of what Brother James was talking about. But if you look at it, if you look at it closely, God is, there's regret in the face of God there, seeing the fall of man and casting him out. Why is there regret? That regret is there because man has turned away from God in the fall. And why does he turn away? He turns away because he is proud. He turns away because he wants something and he thinks that God is keeping it from him. He turns away eventually because he is not even willing to admit that he is at fault. He needs to point at Eve, and Eve needs to point at the serpent, and so on and so forth. So this turning away from God, where does it begin? It begins in pride. And where is pride located? In the soul. So Augustine's fundamental argument is, the reason we sin is not because we have bodies. The reason we sin is because we have intelligent souls that freely made the choice to turn away from God. And once the soul turned away from God and became proud and disobedient towards God, a whole lot of other things followed. Primarily what followed was that the body, which was meant to be obedient perfectly to the soul, stopped being obedient to the soul, just as the soul stopped being obedient to God. It's a hierarchical system. The soul is supposed to be obedient to God. The body is supposed to be obedient to the soul. The soul stops being obedient to God. The body immediately falls out with the soul. So that is Augustine's basic picture of the fall, which he needs to explain why it is that the problem is not with bodies. The problem is with our souls. So, then he comes to, I'm going to skip over what Brother James spoke about, which is the incarnation and our redemption, and come to the resurrection. When we are restored, so if this hierarchy is to be restored, the resurrection has to be bodily. It has to have this restoration of the hierarchy of bodies to souls and souls to God. This is a fundamentally kind of a political idea of the body-soul relationship and the soul-God relationship. It's a hierarchy. God is to the soul as the soul is to the body. Just as the soul is restored by the crucifixion, the life, death, crucifixion, and resurrection of Jesus, the body is restored by the restoration of the soul. So it has these flow-on effects. It flows on from top to bottom. And this is an imitation of Christ. Christ's resurrection was bodily, so our resurrection will also be bodily. The other thing, important thing for Augustine, is the beauty of creation. The human body is made, the human being is made perfect. He's made perfect because all of his parts fit together. There's not only the body and the soul, but also within the body, the organs of the body, the parts of the human being, even our nails and our hair and all of that, is not gross. It is part of the beauty of creation. So, the body is necessary. And then he says, and it's a very clever move, he says, look, even Platonists admit that the body is necessary because they speak of these perpetual reincarnations. If you look at any pre-Christian epic, any pre-Christian poem, you have these elaborate tales of journeys to the land of the dead, returns from the land of the dead, and people see what souls undergo in the land of the dead, which is mostly labor, and then they keep returning back to the body. So you have a perpetual reincarnation. Augustine uses this to argue that, look, even your own authorities, who supposedly say we need to escape the body, keep coming back to the body. How do you explain that? And then he says, you can explain it if you understand that in heaven, what is taken away is not the body, but corruption, sin, decay, all that afflicts our bodies because of the fall. So, where Plato is concerned to emphasize the importance of bodies, and Porphyry, the need to avoid evil, Augustine says, you can reconcile both of these by saying, with Plato, that bodies are necessary for human beings, and with Porphyry, that there will be freedom from the evils of the world. This means that a whole lot of matter needs to be recreated. A whole lot of other things need to happen. Augustine deals with that by saying God's power is not limited by Plato's ideas. But this means that he has to answer those objections that we raised earlier. What happens to bodies of people who have been cannibalized? What happens to our nails and our hair, and so on and so forth. The first thing that he says is that the body becomes perfectly subject to the soul. As a result of this, we have full bodies. We have perfect bodies. A perfect body is not one which is ghostly, like that picture over there, you know, like kind of invisible, kind of shining through. There's no inside, there's just a light shining through the thing. A perfect body is one that has internal organs. It has the external perfection of all humanity. Our shameful parts, they're called in Latin the shameful parts, pudenda, we still have them, but they're not going to be shameful. How is this? Well, Augustine says, he's dealing with this objection of why is it do we need them? After all, we're not going to eat and drink in heaven, so we won't need internal organs. There is not going to be reproduction in heaven, so we don't need reproductive organs. Augustine says, look, we all our organs, everything that we have, is not just about fulfilling one function. For instance, we have teeth. We don't just eat with our teeth, but we also speak with them. And many parts of our bodies, and he's thinking primarily of beards here, many parts of bodies exist only for the sake of beauty. And he says that this is what's going to happen in heaven. The perfection, the full perfection of humanity that is shown, for instance, in the Da Vinci drawing, is going to be perfectly transparent. We're going to see why we have, how beautiful all of these parts of our body are. What is it that makes me me? The beauty, the arrangement, the order of human beings. One of the problems that happens because of the fall is that we stop being able to see this. As a result of the resurrection, we will be able to see them. Therefore, that's part of the perfection of what humanity is. To have bodies and to be seen to have bodies which are perfect. Then we'll be capable of seeing and appreciating this, which means that, in a sense, our bodies will be transparent to each other. We might not be able to, the bodies might be covered up, but we will be able to appreciate if you like, each other's innards. So look forward to having, I don't know, maybe translucent skin. Likewise, the organs which are called shameful, pudenda in Latin, will no longer be shameful because there will not be any lust, which is again a problem not with bodies but with souls. Our vices and corruption will vanish because these are acquired as a result of the fall. But then Jesus rose with his wounds. And this is something that he has to deal with. So he says, Jesus rose with his wounds as a result of, not of weakness. He didn't need to retain these things. He retained them to show his power, to show the extent of his love. Something similar might happen, Augustine is not entirely sure, with martyrs. But then what becomes of the other sorts of bodies we've spoken of? Infants who die, those who are maimed or disabled in some way, those which have been destroyed, dispersed, or cannibalized. So if all imperfection is remedied, then everybody will be restored to full perfection without corruption. So the men will have beards, because it's part of masculine perfection. Augustine says this, not I. Women will be transformed, will not be, rather, transformed as some heretical sects have it, but they will be raised as women with feminine perfection. And this is another interesting advance of Christianity over pagan religion, over Greek paganism at any rate. Femininity for Christianity is not a vice or some sort of imperfection, but it is nature. The complementarity of man and woman reflects eternally the union between Christ and the Church, even in the general resurrection. Augustine doesn't think, as some later Christians have thought, that everybody will be 33. He does think that everybody will have reached maturity, what the Romans called juventus, which as best as I've been able to figure out is between 28 and 50. The Romans think human perfection is attained between 28 and 50, so we'll all be somewhere between 28 and 50, depending on whether we go past it or whether we die before it. So look forward to being about 50. 50 is the perfect age, not 30. The fact that a lot of matter needs to be created doesn't bother Augustine particularly. God, who created the universe, can make up the missing matter. Likewise, God can reorganize it. The same bit of matter doesn't need to go into the same place. And he does this in dealing with the question of what happens to our nails and our hair. Augustine takes Luke 21:18, Not a hair of your head will be lost, quite literally, and he says it'll be fulfilled, but not in length. So we won't have hair with the length that we will not get back all the hair that we ever lost in our lives, thank heavens. But they will return in number. But the matter will go elsewhere. Likewise with any deformities or growths, all imperfection will be made up. So Augustine allows this, that the same matter does not need to return to the same place, but it's a much more restricted one. Aquinas will take this much further. Likewise with the cannibalism problem, by the way. The cannibalism problem is solved by appeal to this idea of perfect maturity. The body which undergoes famine loses something of itself, to the air or some other way. And this is made up by nourishment. If God can return the matter to where it was, the flesh which a cannibal eats is effectively borrowed from its owner. It remains the flesh of its original owner, and it will be returned to the original owner in the general resurrection, in its perfect state. Then you need to talk about what sort of bodies we will have in heaven. How will they be capable of living in heaven? The bodies, he says, will be perfectly obedient to their souls. So they can be anywhere at any time. They're capable of perfectly obeying any movement that I have of my mind, of my soul. And the whole thing is controlled by this whole image of the resurrection. The central biblical text for this is 1 Corinthians 15, where St. Paul speaks of the bodies being sown in corruption, raised in incorruption. There's this idea of the seed. So he says, the fully perfected body is already in the infant, and it will be returned. So what do we get from Augustine? We get this idea of the perfection of the human body, the necessity of the human body, the fact that human beings are composed of body and soul together. We're not just souls walking around or souls somehow tied to bodies. We're actually embodied souls. We get the idea that resurrected bodies will be transformed in some way. But you also get a kind of, there are downfalls to all of this. There's one big problem. One is that he thinks of souls and bodies as two kind of things, where the body is kind of an afterthought. The soul is supposed to be in control of the body, and that's the body belongs in heaven because it's somehow necessary for the soul. Why is it necessary? He says, look, our souls are actually like charioteers. This is Plato's basic idea. Are like charioteers, or are like rulers who have a kingdom. Without a kingdom, a ruler is not really a ruler. So he needs to have a kingdom. That's why we have bodies and souls. This is useful, but it's kind of problematic. It's problematic because it makes the body a kind of afterthought. So all of this, basically, Augustine's basic solution is taken up and transformed and fine-tuned by Aquinas. Aquinas has the same dependence on 1 Corinthians 15. He has the same idea that resurrection is mirrored in us. So we have Christ is resurrected with his body, so we are resurrected with our bodies. Resurrection is conformity to the resurrected body of Christ. So, but then he goes on to explain the kind of transformation that we have. Well, actually, I'll first go to the question of what is it that Aquinas transforms. Aquinas moves from a basically Platonist view of humanity to a basically Aristotelian move. This is Plato and Aristotle on each side. For Aquinas, the idea is that a human person is a body whose form is given by the soul, rather than a body which is ruled by a soul which is different from it. See the distinction between these two? So, whereas Augustine needed to explain why souls needed bodies in heaven, and he did so in terms of the fittingness of it, Aquinas argues that it's really the soul's existence without a body that would need to be explained. And then he says, if our souls continually exist, as they're designed to do, then our bodies need to continue to exist. Because without bodies, we'd be like having a part of ourselves, let's say a hand, kind of wandering around. And this is zombies and so on and so forth. So this idea that we kind of have a part of us that somehow wanders off and still remains, moving by itself. That's a weird and ultimately nonsensical idea, but it's an appealing one. It's a fun one for many reasons. If the soul is the form of the body, in order for the soul to continue to exist, the body needs at some stage to be revived. And it needs to be a body if it's to be my body, not just somebody. It's not, so resurrection is not, reincarnation. So reincarnation is when one soul goes into another body. Resurrection is when my soul comes back with my body and forms me. So if we are to have resurrection, we need to have a body being restored. Otherwise, we have a perpetual kind of contradiction in terms. We have this wandering, kind of, if you like, a talking head or a talking arm. So he says that the immortality of the soul seems to require the resurrection of bodies. So this is an exact reversal of Augustine's terms in some sense. There is a natural desire for human salvation, which will be frustrated if we don't have bodies. The other thing that Aquinas is doing is arguing against Muslim ideas of the resurrection. Particularly, he argues that we shouldn't think of human life in heaven as a continuation or as a kind of a return to the same sort of things that we do on earth. We don't marry. Heaven is not about having huge banquets, although I suppose we could have banquets if we wanted. So he deals with both of these by speaking of the transformation of the body. The body undergoes four kinds of transformation. So bodies are of the same nature as they were before death, because they're like Christ's bodies, but they're transformed by the addition of four qualities. One is incorruptibility. So in heaven, our bodies will no longer be capable of undergoing corruption. Second is part of what Augustine spoke about. Our bodies will be clear, visible to each other in a way in which they weren't before us. How this remains a mystery in a way. Agility. We can move our bodies at the behest of our souls. And what he calls subtlety, which is it's capable of being in the same place as other bodies. So all of these, they're not superpowers. Each of them has a reason for existence. Incorruption, because our souls will become, our bodies will become perfectly obedient. Therefore, there won't be a quarrel between parts of us. There won't be a quarrel between the soul and the mind. There won't be a quarrel between the different parts of the human body. They will be in perfect harmony. Clarity, because we are, our beauty is perfectly visible to each other. Subtlety, it's by reference to the imitation of Christ. Just as Christ was capable of passing through doors, so are we. And agility, because of obedience to the soul. So as a result of this development, what is ruled out? So I'll conclude with this. What is ruled out is two things, two opposite extremes. One is the idea that we come back as ghosts. So that idea of ghosts. We're not ghosts, we're bodies. The second thing is that we're not going to return to a purely, to the same kinds of things that we were doing. Eternity is not about living the same kind of life day after day that we lived on earth. Eternity is something much, much more. It includes our earthly part of us, our earthly history and so on, but it transcends it. And this idea, which remains to this day, that people will rise in perfect bodies, aged about 29 to 50 for the men with beards. So I'll end there.
That was Deacon Robert Krishna with The Resurrection of the Body, What Happens to the Body After Death. This presentation was part of the 2017 Aquinas Symposium on the theme, The Beauty of Truth. And for more talks, interviews and shows, visit cradio.org.au.